I only have one that was on the question was one of the questions on the practice quiz.
The practice quiz. Hi, Andy. I see you. The practice quiz from week two or week three?
Week three, the one we just had now.
The one we just had? Okay. I don't mind getting to that, but I was going to start with anything that was left from week two, if anybody had any remaining questions from week two. So let me check on that first. Hannah, do you have any questions from week two? I noticed that our grades were not so wonderful on our week two quiz, and so I thought maybe I should clarify some things there.
I'm not sure. I realized where I went back to on one of them, I was really sick of myself because I plugged in the formula, did it correctly, and then whenever I clicked the answer, I accidentally clicked mine. So that was one of the questions.
So you're saying yours was that famous user error thing?
Yes.
We hate that.
All right. There, now my pin's happier. It might let me do things.
Yes. All right. Okay, so you don't really have any particular questions from week two then. Christine, how about you? Was your quiz okay? Was there anything from your quiz you would like to ask about from week two?
I can't really remember the quiz from week two.
You can go back and look at it. Just go log on to the class site and look and see what you did and ask about questions on it. It's closed, so we can talk about it as much as we want.
I did one question about this week, and it's very brief. I figured out how to do one of the formulas with a bit of a different formula than what's in the book, and I was wondering if I memorize that, if I can use that on the test.
You sure can. If you liked it better and you don't mind having to memorize it, I don't object at all.
Okay, but I wouldn't be able to bring that and show you and then get it approved to be added onto, or I would?
No, typically, I just want you to use the ones I give you to give you. So, hi.
I've got help here.
Well, did you have anybody in the room last week, or were they all in the conference?
They were all in my conference.
Okay, I'll leave the camera the way it is. If somebody shows up in the room, we'll switch the camera where it's got both views. But if you're the only one in here, we just need the camera on you.
Okay.
You're the star.
I am the star. Yes. I feel a little lonely in this room. Well, every week I invite people to come and join me here. But
at least you've got some nice ladies to talk to.
I know. I do have faces on my screen.
A couple nice ladies and Sarah. So there you go.
Sarah, I would hit him, but he's running away too fast. All right. That was, so uncalled for.
Okay.
So. Back to Sarah, I haven't invited you in yet. Anything from the week two quiz that you would like me to discuss?
Yes, I did terrible on that quiz.
Well, you and several others. See, I thought I wouldn't have to ask twice because it was a little bit scary how some of us did, and we just want to straighten that out a bit.
Okay.
You find a question for me here. I'm going to get back to a pen
so I can write. And you just tell me what you want to know.
Okay, so a question I got incorrect was, the table below shows the number of people testing positive for a certain disease amongst those who do have the disease and amongst those who don't.
Okay.
Use the table to answer the question.
Okay, so you're going to have to tell me about this table. I assume it's got two rows and two columns, or maybe three rows and three columns, counting the total.
It's got three rows and three columns.
Okay, so first give me the three rows. What do they say?
Disease, no disease, and total.
So disease, no disease, and total. Got it? All right.
And then across the top, my columns read?
Test positive.
Okay, positive.
Test negative, and total.
Negative, in total. Okay.
So let's see. Give me the numbers that go across from disease.
116.
Got it.
22.
22?
Yes, 22.
Got it.
And 138.
138. That makes sense because that's what those add to.
Okay, very good. No disease.
977.
Well, that's good. It was a healthy crowd. Okay.
8,885.
Yes. Wow. Okay.
And then the total is 9,862.
Okay, and so then across the bottom row, my totals, the total in the positive column would be?
1,093.
Okay. And then the total in my negative column?
8,907.
Very good. And then this last column is
should be?
10,000.
All right. Okay, so now I've got the data in front of me that you had in front of you. Now read me what specific thing they ask for.
What percentage
okay.
of those that don't have the disease tested negative?
What percent of the no disease tested with no disease? They tested negative. So in other words,
amongst the people
that were not sick, how accurate was this thing? Okay.
So here's my no disease. That's row two. And I see that in row two, 8,885
tested
negative out of a total of
9,862
that all do not have the disease. So since we're asking the percent of the no disease that tested negative, then I'm saying what percent of 9,862 is 8,885. So this is what I need to do, and then technically to have it be a percentage, I'm going to have to multiply it by 100, okay, to account for my percent sign. You remember that triangle thing that I kind of introduced the first week? I said this first base to the left in the base of the triangle or the pyramid is your percent. What percent? This is what we don't know. And then this is of, so what percent of the 9,862? Or what percent of the no disease? So all of the no disease, 9,862. Is always the number that's with is the what goes in the top of your pyramid. So is the ones that tested negative, which was 8,885. And so you see my 8,885 is over my 9,862, which is how I knew that I should divide. Okay, so I set it up that way. So at this point, it should just be a matter of sticking it into my calculator, and hopefully my answer is there. Let me see. I've got 888, oops, I gotta turn my calculator on first. 8885 divided by 9862. And so I get 90.09. I don't know what the feedback is, but I've got weird noises in here with me. How are the rest of you?
It's probably me. I forgot to mute my microphone.
Well, it's like off and on. I'm not really sure. Okay, so anyway, this is this. Now, is this what you got? Did I miss the question too, or did I do it differently than you did?
No, you probably did it correct because you're the teacher and you're never wrong.
Oh, yeah, that's a lovely thought. Not true. Okay.
But I did, instead of the total across to 9,862, I did the total below the negative.
Which was, okay, so you did the total of people who tested negative instead of the people who have no disease.
Right.
So I also did that.
You also did that. Okay.
I got the 98% one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I did that.
That's what I did too.
Okay, so now do you see how the reading of the problem sent me in the other direction?
Yeah.
Because this is what I would classically describe to my high school kids. I said, this is not a math problem. This is a reading problem. You know, you missed this question because of how you read the question, not because of your knowledge of mathematics. You all knew how to calculate the percentage. You know, what you did was you misread what percentage they wanted you to calculate. So I'm looking at two categories, the no disease category
and the tested negative category. Okay.
And I need the total in the no disease. What else can we talk about? This quiz had many challenges, apparently.
I did have a question, but it wasn't over the quiz.
Okay, well, you can ask me another question. What do you want to know?
Okay, I don't know if you got my email today, but I wasn't able to send in my test on Moodle. For some reason, none of my classes, even my traditional classes, I haven't been able to post, like, attach a Word file, and they're trying to figure out why, but I emailed you my test, if that's okay.
Okay, that's, you know, I'm really glad you said this. I haven't had a chance to look at my email. I'm usually home about 30 minutes between when I get home from school and when I come back here. And so I don't get a lot done. So I hadn't looked at that, but I kept looking throughout the day as I had a couple of minutes. I kept thinking, almost no one has turned in this test. What is wrong with the people in this class are not turning in this test? So that,
you know, makes me feel so much better about all of you.
It's not your trouble. Okay, so the Word file, it wasn't letting you submit a Word file. It's fine.
It doesn't let me do it on my traditional classes. I don't know if it's because everybody else says they can, but, like, even in my traditional classes today, I wasn't able to submit some of my papers for, like, my biblical classes that I take at the school.
Okay.
And, so I had to email them, but I emailed you probably, like, at 6:30 this morning. And I asked if I could just email it to you, and then I didn't get a response. So it got to like 12 o'clock, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to email it to her and be like, hopefully she takes it that way.
Better to do it than not to do it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I like the way you think. Okay.
Which test was that, Professor Long? I'll check the course site and see if there's a setting that needs to be fixed.
Okay. It's Hannah, isn't it?
It's Brittany.
Oh, it's Brittany. Sorry. It's Brittany.
Yeah, but which assignment was it?
Unit one test.
Yeah, there you
Unit
go.
Unit one test. Okay, I'll have a look at it and make sure that it's allowing uploads.
Okay, well, it allowed some because I had at least four.
Oh, okay.
Mine is showing that it was submitted. Are you seeing that I've submitted mine?
I'll take a look.
I can only look at one thing at a time, so if I have my whiteboard up, I can't see your faces, and so I don't know who I'm talking to, but, you know, we can work problems this way. Okay.
I submitted them yesterday, and I didn't have any problems.
You didn't have any trouble? Okay. Yeah. Well, sometimes weirdness happens. I mean, just does. We try to work on it as much as we can. Okay, so back to the content of week two. Before I move into week three, I want to make certain I've resolved any questions that people have concerning things in week two. Because like I said, I wasn't fully satisfied, and I don't suppose all of you were either, with how those quiz scores looked on the weekly quiz. Does anybody have another question from the weekly quiz that they'd like to discuss?
Are you discussing week three's practice quiz yet?
No, but that'll be our next stop. I just kind of wanted to
talk about things in week two, if anybody else did. Just because the scores were rather low for the actual
was, maybe that I, one the one with the absolute percentage or it, I think it was absolute percentage and the change.
I think the two things they ask you for are absolute change.
Yeah. And percentage change.
And then maybe relative change.
That might be, yeah, if I can remember right. I don't have it, the question right in front of me.
Percentage change.
Percentage change?
Yeah.
Okay, so percentage rather than relative, but they're kind of odd. So in the back of, this is from, I want to say chapter 3, I believe. Let me look real quick. Not mislead you. Yes, on page 183.
In your book, there's the chapter
summary for chapter 3, and you see formulas for both of these things. So again, this is the page that you will have access to on test day, and of course, you have access to your whole book when you're taking a quiz, and I assume you're, you know, using it freely. It's a quiz. It's not a test, so I want you, it's all about learning. This is all about the learning. But this is the page you'll have even on the night of the test. And so we see that absolute change is just new value minus reference value. Okay, so new.
Subtract reference.
And I'm gonna abbreviate there. And then when we need that relative change, we're gonna tab this same thing, new minus reference. So this number that I get up here is the number that goes on top.
Down here. And then I divide by the reference, and then I'm multiplying by 100 because I want it as a
percentage number, and so that makes it parts per 100. So there, those formulas are right there, not asking you to memorize these formulas, just to be able to use them. So on your question, I don't know which one you were looking at. You can pull up your quiz and you can look at these. You can always go back and look. Sometimes I put comments in your quizzes, so you might want to go back and look, because I'll try to, if I can figure out what you did wrong, I'll try to write you a note and say, okay, you did this, and you should have done this instead. So you can call these quizzes back up, and you can look at them. Anybody remember exactly what the problem said on the quiz? I just remember there was one, but I don't know what numbers to use.
I can read that one. That was the one with the user error.
Okay.
So it says the value of Anna's house increased from $160,000 when she bought it 20 years ago to $1.38 million today.
How much was that worth today?
$38 million.
So now another challenge on this particular problem
is the large numbers. Why would I ever use a number that involved millions of dollars? You know, in my normal everyday life, I certainly don't. But here we go. It's part of the problem. This is what I wish was going on with my house. It would solve all of my retirement struggles. But I fear that's not what's going on with my house. So she had great appreciation, gained a lot of value. Her reference value
is where she started. So in her case,
it's the purchase price. That's her reference value. The new value is what her house is now worth. All right? So when I need to know my absolute change, I'm just going to go up here and go
1,380,000
subtract 160,000. Okay, so I have to translate this if they, you know, they didn't want to put all those zeros in. So use the word million, but I'm going to have to put them back in so that I can do the subtraction problem. That's going to be my absolute change. She gained value. She gained lots of value. And so it's going to be a positive number. If the number that we get there is negative, then we know that sadly we lost money instead of gaining it. Let's see. Do I have enough zeros in this? 1, 2. Okay, so I get that she gained
1,220,000 dollars.
That's her absolute change. Now, when we want to get the relative change, this is the same calculation. So I'm going to use this number on top.
I'm going to
divide by my reference value. Well, remember, that was what she paid for the house to start with. And then I'm going to take it times 100.
In order to get a
percent. So I take this number, I divide by 160,000. I get 7.625 times 100.
Gives me 762.5%.
Now, this is that moment where you have to stop and ask yourself, does this really make sense? Because typically we think of percents being, you know, somewhere between 0 and 100. You know, 100 is the best I can do on the test. But 100 gaining 100% would simply be doubling my money. The value of her house has way more than doubled. And so getting this very large percentage number makes sense because of what we see has gone on with the value of her house. You talk about a great investment. She hit the jackpot.
So she has, in fact,
gained that much. Who did I do this one for?
Brittany.
Brittany. So, Brittany, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It makes sense now because I was sitting there wondering. It more confused me on the part of it being 762.5%. So
right.
I picked the one that was like 70%, I think,
right
on this.
Uh-huh.
No. I was like, that makes more sense because it's less than 100, but I was more confused on the fact that you could go over 100%.
Right. Do you see now why it went over 100%?
It went over 100% because it more than doubled it.
Exactly. That's exactly it. We just don't, you know, in a when you're thinking about your grades and whatever, that's not going to happen. But in other situations that use percentages, that can happen. And, you know, like I said, in this case, it's an extraordinarily great investment, but certainly it could happen. It happens for some people. I'm waiting for my house to start gaining value like this. All right. Yeah, I know. It's like, maybe I didn't buy the right house. I don't know. Okay, so anything else from this week two quiz? Otherwise, you know, we'll just start talking about week three. And, you know, just kind of plunge on in. I don't mind at all. Here, I'm going to do just a little check here.
I've got to get out of this so that
I can see who's here because I can only hear you and I cannot see you. Okay, so right now I see that I better take attendance too. It's not good to forget this. I have in class with me Hannah.
And I have Brittany.
There you are, Brittany. I was not finding your name. Okay. I don't know anybody's last name. I'm doing really good to know your first name. And I have Christine. And then let's see who else I have, because I know I have more. And then I have Sarah and I have Robbie. Robbie, hi. I don't think I've heard your voice yet tonight.
Robbie, are you with me?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. I
see you in the microphone.
I see your face, so I'm thinking you're with me. Okay, great. So, Robbie, before we move on, I want to make sure you had a chance to ask anything you want to know from the week two quiz. It's closed now. We can literally work those very problems if somebody wants to see them work.
Well, I was kind of looking through to see, I mean, most of them were like the yards, and we kind of went over those, and I was just kind of skimming through to see if there was something that caught my eye.
Okay, you feel free to do that.
We can't go over test questions yet, can we?
Test questions. No, because people are allowed to turn in their test late. And so I don't want to talk about it and then have somebody use my knowledge to make their test grade better. I do not want to talk about those test questions yet.
Sarah, do you have anything else?
I don't remember how your weekly quiz was. Anything?
Me?
Yeah, you, Sarah.
this past week?
Yeah, the week two one.
Yeah, I probably missed a couple.
You were an absolute all-star on the practice quiz, but then I was thinking you kind of disappointed yourself on your weekly quiz. So if you want to know, you know, this is while you're thinking about it, and Robbie's still thinking about what she wants to know, I want to get this, you know, on the recording where everybody will hear it. There's a strategy to this thing that I want you to think about from a learning perspective. I know as students you have to be practical about your time perspective, and I honor that because I know how my time feels also. But from a learning perspective, let me share with you that the pool of questions that is generating these quizzes each week is relatively large. So if you only take your practice quiz one time, you saw 10 questions out of maybe 50 to
75 to maybe even 100 questions that are in there, all right?
So you didn't really get a very good look at very many questions. Now, if you do well, then the feeling is, great, I've got this, and I'm going to go ahead and take my quiz. But it could turn out that there's a question on the quiz of a type that you didn't get by only taking one practice quiz.
That was me.
Every time you take a practice quiz again, it generates 10 more questions for you. And so every time you take it, you're seeing more questions in the pool, and you're much more likely then to be certain you've seen at least one of every type. And so I don't know if that makes sense to you, but you actually probably are better off to take the quiz two or three times. Even if your first one is fantastic, understand from a grade perspective, it's always going to hold on to your highest score. So if your first quiz goes really well, what I would encourage you to do is still go in and act like you're going to take a second quiz. And then flip through the questions and do only the ones that look different from the ones that you saw before. Yeah, you're going to get a lousy score because you're not answering all the questions, but it doesn't matter. You already got your good score, okay? But now you're just looking to make certain you've seen all the types of problems and that you know how to do them. I think it will just help you maybe have the same kind of result on the weekly quiz that you got on that practice quiz. Instead of, you know, getting your 80 or your 90 or your 100 on the practice quiz and then going in and getting a 40 or a 50 or a 60 on your weekly quiz and going, that is not what I was planning on getting. So I would just encourage you to look at more questions, whether you actually take more complete quizzes or not, just for the sake of the learning, just so you can see more information. You'll help yourself. And those quizzes stay open. The practice quizzes stay open. The weekly quiz closes, and you can't get back into it. You get one try, and it's gone. But you can go back, even to a previous week, and look at the practice quizzes. So as we're moving towards the end of the class, and you're thinking about this test, and you're trying not to stress out about it, okay, know that you can go back and look at those practice quizzes some more and try some more questions. And sure enough, I'm gonna, the questions I picked for that final test, they're in that pool. So if you take enough practice quizzes, the night of the test, you may go, I remember this question. I've answered it before. I remember this question too. And yeah, you, okay? It just shows you were really prepared and you get the benefit of that time that you've invested. So I don't know. Maybe that'll help because I know some of you are pretty disappointed when your weekly quiz is much lower than what you earned on the practice quiz.
Okay, last call.
Anything from week two that we should talk about before we jump into week three?
Okay, there was this one question.
Sure thing.
A curved bridge rises over a river so that the two endpoints of the bridge are 160 yards apart horizontally.
Okay, I am listening to you. My pen is not
working. I hear stuff.
I'm digging, trying to get it to work. Okay, all right. Now we've got a curved bridge.
Curved bridge.
And then keep going from there.
You walk across the bridge with a device to measure its length and discover that the walking distance is 168 yards.
So on the curve, if I walk the curve, I've walked 168 yards.
Got it.
Approximately how high does the bridge rise above the horizontal?
Okay. So did
they tell us how far apart these endpoints were on the horizontal?
160 yards apart.
They're 160 yards.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I always hate it when I have to admit these things. I really should go and pull this question out. Because it's really.
Well, I think you have it. Like, it was just kind of confusing.
Okay. Who got this one and solved it? It's not really one I'm particularly that interested in. What we want to know, I mean, I understand the question.
Here's the
horizontal. It's 160 yards. This is 168 yards. So yeah. We're trying to figure out,
you know, how far is this distance?
Okay, got it. Okay.
Clearly, if the curved distance is this close to being the same, there isn't much curve.
Right.
This is like a bridge over a wetlands mm-hmm. as opposed to a bridge over a river. Yeah, I mean, does that make sense?
Yes.
Just because of how close these are. And sometimes these quizzes are written such that if you just think about it that much, there's only one logical number on there, okay? But in terms of knowing how to calculate it, I didn't give you a formula for this. So in fairness to you, I should not have had this on your quiz. Is this on the weekly quiz or the practice quiz?
It's a practice.
Okay, all right. So if it's on your weekly quiz, I go in and give you credit because I shouldn't have done it. I should take it out of my practice pool, and I just missed it, and it's still in there. So if this is the only thing you don't know how to do, you're good to go. But it would be good to at least be able to analyze it well enough to know I'm looking for a short distance, a small number. Do you remember what your answer choices were?
I don't remember what my answer choices were, but I figured it was small. Yeah. So I chose the smallest one, but it wasn't correct. So
it must have been a little bit too small, huh?
Right.
Yeah, well, you were thinking correctly, and truly that's all I would have expected you to do.
Okay. Thank you.
On my quiz, I had the same question, but I had to type in the answer. I didn't have choices.
Man, that's mean.
What? Yeah.
And it was the same kind of thing with this bridge?
Yes.
Okay, I got to make
practice quiz.
I got to take the bridge question out of there. We don't need it. All right.
Note for next year. Thank you.
I'll go looking for it and get it out of the pool. It's in the week 2 practice.
I'm looking at the practice quiz now, and I see another one. It's about two bicyclists who are riding towards each other, and there's a dog that's running between them. And yes. that one also has a fill in the blank. So okay. It's really confusing because then I didn't have an answer to even like
yeah, you're right.
Figure it out. So.
Yeah, I remember that question.
That one's kind of fun if you are geeky and like algebra, but otherwise you probably didn't enjoy it all that much. Okay. Remove both of those. Gotcha. I will do it for you. Because those should not be there. All right. Are we ready to talk about week 3 then?
I'm betting we are.
So, for this week, we are entirely in Chapter 4, and the very first section of Chapter 4 is about personal finances, and to a great degree, it's about budgeting, all right? I didn't even,
you know,
keep any of the PowerPoint slides from this. I don't want to spend a lot of time here, because I know that at least most, if not all of you, take a budgeting class, a personal finance class here at Dallas Christian College. And so probably the bulk of what is in this particular section is already addressed in another class for you, and therefore I figure my time is better spent focusing on other things. But just to kind of, because I've never sat in that class, I don't thoroughly know what all of the content is, let's just take a quick look at what I think are things similar to what I might test you over from this section, just to make certain that everybody understands or has a chance to ask their questions about it. So looking on page 193, you notice every week I have talked about some of these does it make sense questions. Because on your final test, you are going to have something like six short essay questions, and you can choose four to answer. And you can do one more for a bonus or something like that. I don't remember the exact numbers, but something like that. And there are questions like this. It's your chance to explain to me how well you can read and analyze the problem and explain your thinking. So does it make sense? And so some of them literally are, does this make sense questions. So I want to talk about these. This week I picked out 8 and 10. Question 8 says, my monthly cash flow was -$150, which explained why my credit card debt kept rising. Okay, question 8. Would you say that makes sense?
Yes.
How come? Explain further.
Because when you don't have any cash, but you still need to buy gas, you're going to have to use credit.
Exactly.
Not drive.
Or groceries, or the doctor bill, or any number of other things, right? So into the end of the month, I can add up and see that I spent more than I made.
The extra spending went on my credit card bill.
Sure as anything. Okay? And so, yes, that sentence makes sense. All right, number 10. Emma and Emily are good friends who do everything together, spending the same amounts on eating out, entertainment, and other leisure activities.
Yet Emma
has a negative monthly cash flow, while Emily's is positive because Emily has more income. What do we think about this one? Does this make sense?
I would say yes, because it's the same thing. If your income doesn't match your expenses, you're still going to end up in that situation.
Okay. So on the surface, it looks good. It looks like it's kind of the same question. What is it that these two ladies are spending the same amount on?
The entertainment and eating out and leisurely activities.
There we go. You know,
the fun stuff.
Right? Now, what percentage of your overall income for a month do you get to spend on the fun stuff?
I think it's like 5 to 10%, yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe 10%. You're having a pretty good time if you get to spend 10%. You know, a lot of us are having to live down here because, you know, all the necessities, there's just not enough money left for the fun stuff, okay? And on a bad month, you get a Redbox movie, and that's about it. So they're spending the same thing in this category, but this category is probably a very small amount of their overall spending. Agree?
Yes.
That makes sense to everybody?
Yes.
Other than a difference in income, what else might lead to one of them having a negative monthly cash flow while the other one had a positive?
Bills.
Bills? Okay.
Nope.
One of them
might have a lot of credit card debt that might have been accrued some other time, but it's eating up some other things. What else could be going on?
The amount you spend on groceries.
Well, you know, truly, let's think about groceries for a minute. You're single, you're buying groceries for just you. Let's say that's one of these ladies, okay? Other lady is married and has 3-4 kids.
Do they have
equal grocery bills?
No.
Not even close. Okay, not even close. So if their family situations are very different, then this could be very different. Okay? And could be creating a burden on the balanced budget. What else can cause somebody's budget to really get out of line?
Well,
somebody go ahead.
Okay. It says here that one of them has one income, but if you're not talking specifically about this, then it could be like household income. So if one of them is married and has another income that contributes while one of them is not married, then...
If one of them's from a double income family and the other one just has one income to work with, that could really make a difference. But of course, they're saying one person has to have better income than the other. And my point would be, they don't have to have a better income. Here's always a fun one to ask
people about.
Mm-hmm.
At the Long household, if we have a car that's less than 10 years old, that's really amazing, okay? Because this is just a place where, now we travel all the time and we put mileage on our cars like crazy. It's called buy a Honda, they'll last forever. But we buy old used Hondas because new Hondas are not in the budget. Even a recent Honda is not in the budget. But it always amazes me when I'm taking my kids' friends home or whatever, and I go into an apartment complex that is a relatively low-income apartment complex. You know, nobody's living big, living in this apartment complex. And yet, I hardly pass a car that is as old as mine. And I'm like, wow, there's a lot of money tied up in car payments and possibly even worse, insurance, if they're young drivers. And so sometimes the decision that people make about what to drive, all right, is wrecking their balanced budget, but they don't necessarily see it. So one of these ladies could be driving a much newer, more expensive car that they're still making payments on, while the other one may be driving an older, paid-for car. Their incomes could be exactly the same, but because of the huge car payment, one person's struggling to stay on budget. Does this make sense?
Yes.
So, you know, could it be that their incomes are different? Yes. Are there other possible explanations? Yes. If this was a test question, I would want to see you say, well, that might be true, but it could be this, or it could be this, or it could be this. So I don't think we have enough information here to draw that conclusion as being absolutely true. Okay, so that we're thinking through that process and thinking through what all could be contributing to the problem.
All right, I'm going to turn the page, and I want to look at number 14 and number 20.
This is two problems, again, in the same section.
Let's see here. I'm going to erase.
So I can just start again. Same section where we're asked to do this. Compute the total cost per year of the following pairs of expenses, and then complete the sentence. On an annual basis, the first set of expenses is blank percent of the second set of expenses. All right, so the first
is blank percent of the second. And this is based upon
annual numbers, okay, so for the year. All right, so let's look at number 14. Jeremy buys the New York Times from the newsstand for $1 a day, skipping Sundays, and spends $20 per week on gasoline. So the first would be the Times,
and the second would be gas.
Everybody agree? I can't see your heads. You have to say yes or no. Sorry.
Yes.
Yes.
Chime in every once in a while, because remember, when my whiteboard is up, you disappear. Now, we then need to figure out how much is he spending annually on the Times, and how much is he spending annually on gas, because those are the two numbers that we want to calculate a percentage from. So he is spending $6 a week on the Times because he doesn't buy the Sunday paper. So $6 per week.
But I don't
want it per week. I want it per year. So I need a conversion between
weeks and 1 year.
Can somebody give me the number of weeks in a year?
52.
52 is the right answer. Hey, and I have a gentleman that's joined me. I'll have to find out who you are in just a minute. Okay, so now I've got 6 times 52.
All right, is
my arithmetic good? Does he spend $312 per year?
Yes.
All right.
Well, that's my first number. Notice I set it up so
weeks would cancel out, and that told me I needed to multiply the 52 and not divide. Okay, then there's how much does he spend on gasoline? They tell us that he spends $20 per week. So again,
times that
52 weeks
per year.
We cancel out those units and we get 0 for 1,040?
Yes.
All right. So now then, I need a percentage number that goes here and I need to know what percent 312 is of
1,040. So 312 out of 1,040 times 100 to get the percentage would be the
calculation that I would do.
Anybody already have it done for me?
30?
I don't know. You have to tell me. You think it's 30%?
Exactly. It is 30%.
Say it again.
It is 30%.
It is 30%. And so that would be how I would answer this question.
Is there anything
about the wording of this question that you would like me to explain, why I used the number I did, where I did, anything at all that we should discuss about this?
Okay, I'm sorry. So the 312 over the 1040, what one do you multiply by 100?
Why did I multiply by the 100?
No, which one do you multiply by the 100?
Oh, okay. It doesn't really matter. You could do this division first and then take it times 100.
Okay. Very good.
Or you can remember that every whole number can be put over 1. And so then it would be 312 times 100 divided by 1040 times 1.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, anything else we should clarify here?
Okay, if not,
I'm going to do a little erasing here.
And then I want
you to look at a second one like this. So we're still on page 194. Look at question 20. You read while I erase.
It's the same type of question.
I'm sorry, what page number was that?
Page 194.
I should probably have that on my slide, shouldn't I?
Hey, this time, oops, I forgot to erase one. The answer is probably going to be different. We are comparing the gas that she purchases to her internet cost.
Talk about people who
know they have us and take advantage of it. They know we're not going to do without internet. So they just charge whatever they want. Here we go. So in her neighborhood, she fills the gas tank of her car an average of once every 2 weeks at a cost of $35 per tank of gas. So she is spending $35
per 2 weeks. Okay, she doesn't
have to fill every week. I don't know. She must live really close to work or something. I thought I did, but I still have to fill once a week. And so that's what she spends. And we want to change that into an annual expense. So again, I need to change my weeks.
Into 1 year.
And there it is. So when I do that, now again, the order that I do these things in does not really matter. I can take 35 times 52 and divide it by 2 because I am older than calculators. I can remember having to do it this way without my calculator. 2 goes into 5 twice with 1 left over, and 2 goes into 12 6 times. And so then I would just have 35 times 26. But you don't have to do that. You can just type exactly what you have there into your calculator, and it will be fine.
So 35 times 26.
She's spending $910 on gas. Now, this per 2 weeks is a place where I would say many students would mess up, okay? Either because of not reading carefully enough or just not sure what to do with the 2 weeks. But we have to have it in there. She's only doing it every other week. Some people would just say $35 times, and they'd cut their weeks in half and go, she's doing it every other week, so I'm going to take that times 26. That would be fine as well. Okay, her internet charge.
Let me see.
She is paying by the month, as am I. I wish I was only paying $60. That would be great.
Okay, so $60 per month.
And I need to change that into an annual cost.
And so I've got 12 months in 1 year.
Months cancels out and leaves me dollars per year. That's what I'm looking for. So I just need the 12 times 60.
Is my 720 good?
Yes.
All right, so now it's time to calculate the percentage. Do I always put the small number on top?
No.
No, thank you for that. I teach a room full of high schoolers that would say, yes, always. The first number goes on top. So 910
is what percent of 720?
And since 910 is more than 720, I'm expecting a number larger than what?
100.
Then 100, exactly. Because if it was 100%, it would be 720. Okay, so if it's more than 720, it's more than 100%. What percentage does this actually work out to be?
126.38%.
100, I didn't catch your second digit.
26.
26.
Okay, and well, did you give me a decimal too or not?
Did 0.38.
Yeah, so it wouldn't round up, and I'll just leave it there. I don't know what they told us to do, but I'm going to leave it like that. Okay, so again, anything about this question you want to ask me before I move forward?
All right.
The last thing I want to look at then
are the questions
36.
Let me find it.
36 through 40, that section of questions, I'm still on page 194. Now it's down at the bottom of the page, 194. I want you to look at question 36, read it carefully, and then they're referencing figure 4.1. And I'm going to tell you that figure 4.1 is on page 190. So read that question and go look at that figure, and I'll be right back with you.
Thank you.
All right, so we have income.
And we have the entertainment spending. You know, there we go again, the fun stuff.
And then we're also told their age range, so we know which part of the table that we should be looking at. This couple is under 30. So we're considering the
data for people
under 30, because people under 30 spend their money differently than Mrs. Long does, turns out. I spend my money differently than I did when I was under 30. So here we go. The total income is $3,500 per month, and they're spending
$400 a month on
entertainment. Okay, so there's the information I've been given. I've kind of tried to lay it out in a logical fashion. I go back and look at page 190, the under 30 spending. Or did they say under 30? Well, they just said they're under 30.
Under the age of 30.
So which category of this table am I looking at? And if you are red, green, colorblind, I apologize to you for the publisher's decision about the coloring on this table, because I come from a family of gentlemen who are red, green, colorblind, and they cannot tell the difference between pink and gray. They would be going, I don't know, it all looks the same. But there is a pink bar, there is a pale blue or darker gray bar, and then there's a gray bar underneath. Which bar is referenced for under 30 people?
Pink.
Pink. So we're only interested in pink, okay? And we are only interested in entertainment. So we find the pink bar there beside entertainment. And about what percentage would you say that says the U.S. people spend? I think these are U.S. statistics.
5%.
I'm sorry, say it again.
5%.
5%. Now, we want to know, are they average? Are they above average? Are they below average? So to figure that out, I need to change their dollars into percent. So what percent
of $3,500 is the $400 they're spending? Is this the 400 number of $3,500 puts $3,500 on the bottom?
And then because I want a percentage, I take it times 100. And well, 100 and divide 35 into 40, it's going to go in at least once. And then it's going to go in again, and then I'm going to have a remainder. So I've got 11 point something percent. I don't even really care what that is. I know they're above. They're almost double the U.S. average. Any questions about how we calculated this? Okay, then we're going to be done with this,
and we're going to move on.
So that's 3A, 4A, I'm sorry, that's 4A. Just hitting the highlights. Like I said, I know much of the content in that first section is covered in another class, so I don't want to spend a lot of time there. Let's move on.
I have to make my time better than I did last week, and you're all responsible to help me with that.
My high schoolers laughed at you guys. They said, they actually sat there and you held them overtime? And I said, they did. They're the nicest people. They said, we would have walked out. I said, yeah, I understand that. You would have,
without even thinking about it.
I said, you pack up and give me visual clues, and there's this bell that rings. And
none of that happened last Thursday.
And so I said, there they were, just held captive. And they were so kind about it.
So, we are in the comfort of our own home, so you get a little grace on that one.
What's that?
We are in the comfort of our own home, so you get a little grace.
So you do get me a little bit, but it was not after 9:30 at night. I'm telling you, that is so the end of the day. Honestly, to tell you the truth, I had this really long day last week. I took the day off, so I worked twice as hard. You know, my husband said to me today at supper, he said, so is it going to be easier to teach tonight? And I said, yeah. I said, I just went to work. You know, that's the easy part of life. And he was laughing at me, but I'm telling you, as a mom, that is the easy part of life. So I was too busy doing mom stuff last week. So I was just so tired, I couldn't manage time. That's my excuse. I think I can do better tonight. But you feel free to watch the clock and tell me, hello,
we're all done. Okay, so when we move to part B,
okay, in part B, we are going to talk about the power of compounding interest. We're going to talk about investments. We're going to talk about how to get your money to make money for you and what you need to do in order to make that happen. And so there are some calculations in this particular section, and there's also some terminology. So let's look at terminology, make sure we're all familiar with it. The principal is either the amount you borrowed or it's the amount that you initially invested, okay? It's the balance, and then they're going to pay interest on your principal. If it's simple interest, then it's only going to be paid once a year and only on your principal. They don't give you any interest on your interest, okay? It's the easiest one to calculate, but it is not the best deal from a financial perspective. Compound interest is when they're going to pay you interest not only on your principal, but on the interest that you made. So however much money you made the first year, then you gain interest on that the following year. So for example, while banks almost always pay compound interest, bonds usually pay simple interest. So suppose you invest $1,000 in a savings bond, and it's going to pay simple interest, 10%, each year. How much total interest will you receive in 5 years? Then, if the bond plays compound interest, would you receive more or less? And let's look at the numbers. All right, here we go. Simple interest means every year you're going to get the same payment. It's a payment of 10% of 1,000. So most of us know 10%, just knock off that zero. That means I'm going to get $100. Every year I'm going to make $100. We're going to do this for 5 years. So I'm going to make $500.
Simple interest
is simple to calculate, okay? Not much to it at all. Compound interest. You're going to get more than the $500 because each year after you get your interest, they're going to pay you interest on the interest. So the first year, you get your,
$10 or your $100, I'm sorry. So now you've got $1,100. The second year...
Let me do this so you can see. The second year, we get 10% of $1,100.
All right, they're going to pay us on that interest.
So this is going to make me more money. This raises my balance faster than simple interest. Compound interest will always, always earn you more money.
That means,
what do credit card companies use when they're getting the interest?
Compound interest.
They are out to make money too. So they're, taking your
interest and making it work against you.
So interest can be good, interest can be bad. It depends on which side of that thing you're on. Here's the compound interest formula for interest that's only paid once a year. If it's annual interest,
then this is all you have to have. A is going to be
how much money I have at the end, my accumulated balance. P is my principal, what I start with.
1 plus APR,
whatever percent it's paying, the annual percentage rate. Every car commercial runs APR past you really fast at the end of the commercial. Listen, you'll hear it. And so we're going to put that in as a decimal. And Y stands for our years. If for some reason you're calculating compound interest on 6 months, you do not put in 6 for Y.
Y's got to be in years.
You would put in 0.5 or 1/2 because 6 months is half of a year.
That doesn't very often come up, but you should know that.
So let's look at an example. You invest $100, nice, easy number, in two accounts that each pay a rate of 10% per year. But one of them pays simple interest, the other one pays compound interest. So they're going to build a table for us to show us how this thing grows across the 5 years. And we're going to clearly see the compound interest does make us more money. So here we go.
Notice with simple
interest, every year I get $10. Another $10, another $10. At the end of 5 years, I have made $50. Simple interest, that's how it works. Here's my compound interest. The first year I made $10. Now I get to make 10% of the $110, so now I make an extra dollar.
I made $11 the second year.
So I add that on. Now I've got 121. I'm a dollar ahead. Now I make 10% interest again. Okay? So now I make $12.10. So at the end of 3 years, I'm $3.10 up. I bet 10% on that. And now I've got a $6 lead, six and a half almost. And by the end of 5 years, you're $11 to the good. Okay? So when your money is making money for you, that's a good thing.
So for on $100, it is a bit better, but when it's larger amounts, it starts to get a whole lot better.
Oh my goodness, yes. The more, obviously, the more you put in there, the more you're earning. Okay. The other thing that happens is over a longer period of time, this becomes a bigger and bigger deal. Okay. So over a long period of time, the book uses a really good example of that later when they're talking about King Edward of England borrowing the money. Do you remember that? It starts, they open section B with this story that King Edward of England in 1461 borrowed $384 from New College of Oxford. Okay. He paid back part of it, but he never finished paying off the debt. Okay. So New College of Oxford was looking for some money, like all financial institutions, and they decided to try to collect from the royal family on King Edward's debt. Now, you know, remember, it was only $224 back in 1461. But then they said, okay, let's calculate, let's assume 4% per year interest. You owe us $290 billion. That funny thing, the family, royal family did not feel the need to go ahead and pay for that. I think there's something about you lack documentation. I'm pretty certain they didn't have $290 billion. And so it went in bed. But, you know, so a long period of time, 4% is a small percentage, and the principal wasn't very much, but they had a lot of years on their side, so it really accrued.
All right. So then they tell us we can verify that last one. You don't have to build the whole table just to figure out what you're going to have after 5 years. You can just use this formula. $100 is my principal.
One is a part of the formula. That's to keep what you already have, and then this is to find out what your interest payment is. So 1 times 100, I keep my 100, and then 0.1 times 100. And then we have this exponent here because over time, time is our exponent. This thing is exponential growth. I do want to point out to you these formulas, every formula that you would need, you can find in the chapter summary on page 282. So you can reassure yourself, I am going to have these formulas. You're not sitting at home stressing out about trying to memorize formulas. Okay? They are there. They are there. So there's $161.05, just what we said they were going to have. Okay, so then here's King Edward's example at 4%. It's in your textbook. I'm not going to spend time with it. Show how quarterly compounding affects a $1,000 investment at 8%. So the first one that we looked at, you know, that's still King Edward, it was just paying interest once a year. But now we talk about, what if they're paying my interest every quarter? So I'm going to get paid interest 4 times a year. That means every year has to be broken down into 4 payments. All right. And we see that there is a difference in how much money we're going to have. So here's the compound interest formula for interest paid N times per year. Now, this is sometimes where I start having students, you know, who wish to cry. They're not happy about how this thing looks, okay? Because it looks very complicated. It looks very hard to get in and out of your calculator. How many sets of parentheses do I need? How am I supposed to put that fraction in there? I'm starting to have a headache. So I'm going to try to help you with that. I'm going to show you an online calculator that is extremely friendly to use for these kinds of calculations. And you may feel free to use this online calculator during your test, while you're working on your quizzes, whenever you need it. Let's make certain we understand our letters. P is still principal. APR is still our percentage rate. N then. N is the number of times that they're going to pay me interest. N is always given to you in the problem in a word rather than in a number. You're not going to see a number in your problem for N. Instead, you're going to see monthly, quarterly, daily. All right, semi-annually. So you have to think about what all of those words mean. If I'm getting paid monthly, N is 12, because there are 12 months in a year. If I'm getting paid weekly, N is 52. All right, N is how many times they're compounding my interest that it'll come to you in a word.
All right, so here we go.
You deposit $5,000 in a bank account that pays an APR of 3% and compounds interest monthly. How much money will you have after 5 years? And compare this to what you would have if the interest was only paid once a year. So we want to compare annual interest to monthly interest when the terms are all the same.
Okay, here we go. My principal's
$5,000. My APR is going to go in as 0.03. 3%, you got to move it two places, all right? So 0.03. Monthly compounding means N is 12.
And Y is 5 years, because we're talking about 5-year
period of time. There's my formula. There are my numbers substituted into my formula. And they calculate it.
And there's what I get. All right.
So for interest paid only once each year,
we find the 5 years
by using the formula for once a year. Notice the only difference between this formula and this formula is we don't have divided by N, and we don't have N times Y. When we're paying once a year, N is 1. So dividing by 1 doesn't change anything. Multiplying by 1 doesn't change anything. So they just don't put it in there. They leave it out. They're really the same formula, okay? And for annual, N is 1. So this is the money that we get here. They do the calculations. And you see that you gain a little bit of money, but not enough to, you know, throw much of a party with. It's better. It's not tons better, okay? But if you can get compounded more often, you'll make more money.
All right, so
the difference is $11.71 more, even though they had the same APR. The only difference was how many times they were compounding.
All right,
then the textbook also talks about APY, okay? Not to be confused with APR. Alphabet soup here. Annual percentage yield, or the effective yield,
is your actual percentage
by which your balance changes, okay? So if you were talking about something being compounded annually, you're only going to get your interest once a year, then APY and APR are going to be the same thing.
If you're going to get paid interest
more often, then you're going to make that little bit more than $11.51 or whatever, and so your APY will actually be a little higher. That's really all I need you to know about this. You're probably not going to have to calculate it, but I'd like you to know when they're the same and when they're different. They will be the same for annual interest. APY will be higher if you get to compound your interest more often.
All right. There we go. Greater
than sign.
You remember greater than
sign from school.
That's it for that set of slides.
Now, I want to bring up
my calculator,
if I can find where I put it. There it is. There's Desmos. Okay. So if you would, if you've got something in front of you that you can bring this up right now,
this website is
www.desmos.com/scientific. All right. It will bring up this calculator screen.
So I want you to
have this calculator in front of you, particularly if it makes you nervous. If you're getting along with your calculator fine and you don't know why I'm worried about this section, then I'm probably not worried about you. So that's fine. But it made me nervous to think you were all going to be at home where I can't see your calculator screen and I don't know what's going on and why it's not working. Because usually I'm helping people in the classroom with this. And so I thought, well, I'll show them an online calculator. It's the only thing I know to try to help. So I am working problems from page 214
is where my problems are coming from, okay? And
I'm going to write on this screen instead of going back to the other one. So give me just a second.
Okay, there we go. Let's
begin
by looking at question 58. All right.
Page 214. And question 58. In question 58, they say, you've invested $10,000 at an APR of 2.5% for 20 years. Use the compound interest formula to compute your balance. All right. So $10,000. My compound interest formula, by the way, is this. This is question 58.
A equals P times 1 plus APR
raised to the exponent of y, or the power of y. In problem 58, my P is $10,000.
My APR is 0.04. Because 4%
changes to 0.04, and my y is 20. So sometimes the exponent key is the first point of confusion. People on a day-to-day basis aren't necessarily
Are you doing number 57 or number 58?
Well, I thought I was doing 58. Do I have the wrong numbers?
It's 2.5%.
That's a bummer. Okay, let's do question 57 since I've already got it written up there. What do you say?
But that's only 10 years.
That's only how many years?
10 years.
57. And so then I have to change it to 10 years?
Yes.
Okay. Eventually we'll get the numbers all from one problem.
There we go.
So we would have these numbers. This is then what I am trying to calculate on my screen here. Now, my writing may go away when I go back to the cursor. I am uncertain how this will behave tonight. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Okay, so now I'm ready to type into my calculator. So it's a good thing I have notes so I can remember what it is I want to type in.
I had 10,000. Whoa, not that many. Let's see. Back up. Okay, try it again. 10,000. There we go. Okay.
Parentheses.
There's maybe my parenthesis. Parentheses. There we go.
And notice they put the close one in there. You can't miss it. You can't forget about it because they insert it for you. One. Plus,
I can't quite get the feel for this yet,
0.04.
Okay, so I'm done with this. So then I'm going to go forward,
I hope,
if I can find my forward key. All right, let's give it a try.
I did this on my computer and it was easier. Let's see here. There, okay, just close the parenthesis that gets you on the other side. And then I want an exponent of 10.
And so where it says A to the power of B, that's my key.
So then it moves up and says, yes, this you're putting in an exponent now. And that's where I'm going to put in my 10. All right, and so then according to this calculator, my answer is right here, all right? So $14,802.44
would be our answer to this question,
the amount that we would have. So we initially had $10,000 that we put in. We have gained $4,802.44. That's our interest over time. Anybody have questions about that?
Did you push for the exponent?
The A to the B power. It's right here.
Power. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. The one that kind of looks like B is an exponent.
All right, so that's the one I use to get that exponent key.
And with the graphing calculator, it's just the arrow up button, right?
Yes, it usually looks, I call it the mountaintop key because you're raising up to the mountain. It's an exponent or a power. Yeah, that's what it looks like, or a carrot top key.
Making sure, because I remember taking when I took calculus in high school.
You got to know so many different keys when you're doing that. So, okay, so this is a not too bad calculation. You know, this formula is not too bad.
I have a question.
Sure, go for it.
So when it's whatever percentage rate they give us in the problem, we need to move the decimal point two spaces to the left to make it work in the math?
Yes, because it's parts per 100. So that per 100 is like we're dividing by 100. It moves it two to the left.
That's exactly right.
All right, so this is our calculation for 58. I'm going to clear that off of my calculator. And I'm going to go back. There we go. And we will erase this problem. And let's move to question 66. I'll let you get started on it while I'm still erasing. Question 66. In question 66, we are still investing $10,000. We're investing it for 5 years. Our APR is 2.75%, but now we're compounding monthly. So now when I come over here to my equation, I need N to be in my equation because my N is 12. I'm compounding monthly. So in order to do that,
I go check my formula.
Again, you don't have to memorize these.
They're in the back of the chapter. They're
going to be on your reference sheet. But N goes in two places in this particular calculation. N is, you're dividing APR by N, and then you're also multiplying your years by N. All right? So in problem 66, for P, I have $10,000. And then for the 1 plus, my APR was 2.75%, so 0.0275. That 0.0275 is being divided by 12. I close that parenthesis. And then up here in my exponent, I have the 12 for N times the 5 for Y, okay? And a lot of times if those numbers are small enough, you can just multiply them in your head. You go, oh, I know what 5 times 12 is. I'm just going to put the 60 there. But that's where 60 comes from. If I write 60 there later, you may not know why we had a 60 there. So at this point, I've found my equation, I've plugged my numbers into my equation, and now it's between me and my calculator. How well are we getting along? So let's give it a try again. In this particular calculator, I am going to type in N1000, and then I need a parenthesis,
and I have 1. Plus,
and then I have a fraction. And this is one of the things I really like about this calculator is that it gives me a fraction key. Here's my fraction, A over B. When I push that key, it gives me a fraction and it says here, put in the top number first. And so I type in point.
Whoops, it did not type my decimal point. Let's go back. Point 0.275. Okay, that other zero doesn't matter.
I'm not even going to try to delete it. I'm just going to leave it there. Divided by, so now down here in the bottom, I touch that square and it lets me type there, 12.
I'm ready to go
outside my parentheses, so I close. Did not go outside. Oh, don't do that.
How do I get over there? Maybe I can just touch. Look at that.
Okay. And then I need an exponent, so I use my a to the power of b, and I put in up there
5 times 12.
So I have typed in everything in my formula, and here's the value that I get.
All right, $11,472.21.
Okay. So, my suggestion, if you struggle with the calculator, and I can't see what kind of calculator you have, and I don't know how to tell you how to use your calculator, and some of them are just not that obvious, okay?
You can look a long time for where's the key or where did they hide something.
I think this one at Desmos is pretty straightforward, pretty easy to use. And so it's the best I can do in terms of trying to help you with the calculator is to show you one where you and I are looking at the same calculator and we can figure out what to do from there.
All right. So there we go.
This calculator on the test though, correct?
Say it again.
We won't be able to use that calculator on the test.
I would like for you to be able to use this calculator on the test. That may mean that we have to adjust something about how you use your test. I'll have to talk to Kyle about that.
But I feel like,
you know, it's not like it's cheating. It's just a calculator you understand how to use. I'd like you to be able to use that. Because you're not in the classroom where I can teach you how to use the particular calculator you carry. And some of you can use your own calculators just fine. So, you know, go ahead and do it. But some people haven't really needed to use this type of a calculation on their calculator before. And it may be a little bit difficult for them to get things in and out. Desmos is mighty friendly. So it will mean that you'll have to have a second internet screen open for your calculator.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay. With the calculator, is there any way you could put like the website on Moodle so I could use it while I'm also at work, because I don't want to bring my graphing calculator up to work and forget it.
Yes, I put, when I sent out the announcement this week, I put the address in my announcement.
Okay.
So you should be able to see it there if you go to the news forum.
Okay.
It's there, okay?
All right, thank you.
You bet. Anything else?
Where is the equal button on this calculator?
Where's the equal button? See, it's keeping a running equal, so it's just over here to the right. It's automatic.
Oh, okay.
You
got
it. You don't have to push equals. I know, it's really weird. But you don't have to. It's just constantly telling you, well, so far you have this, and so far you have this. And as you're putting in more numbers, it keeps changing that and updating it. So when you've put everything in, you've got your answer.
I have another question.
Yes.
I put in exactly the same thing that you have, but I have a completely different number on my calculator.
Okay, so, and did you use this Desmos calculator, or are you using a calculator of your own?
No, I'm using the Desmos. I did it simultaneously as you put in the numbers on yours.
Okay.
And I have a completely different number as the answer.
You know, somewhere I'm sure there's a difference. Usually these machines know what they're doing, and we're the ones going, I don't see. But I really think that there's something different. Did your, I'm trying to think what it might be.
Did you use the fraction key to put the point, the 0275?
Yes.
And do you have that front zero there?
I think I figure it out now.
Okay, all right. Usually if it doesn't work, it unfortunately is my operator error, okay? I usually have to confess to that. Oh, the calculator was fine. I was not fine. So let's see if there's anything else in here. I think an interesting question. Let's do this one and we'll finish B with this question. I want you to look at 90, okay? Question 90. And I'll go back and put that on the screen. But you start reading question 90 and thinking about what we need to do.
I have a question while you're doing that.
Sure.
Is there a way to break that
formula down? Like, could you do it differently? Could you answer the fraction and then add the one and have that answer inside of the parentheses to the power of 60?
There absolutely, I mean, think about it. People were calculating this before there were calculators. So we know there's a way to do it besides this way. It's a very legitimate statement. How would you do this if you were going to try to not use your calculator so heavily? Yes, you just have to be careful the order in which you do things.
Okay. Because
we know that in mathematics, order is very important. So, for instance, I can do this fraction, and my calculator will give me a decimal for it. And then, because it's inside of the parentheses, I then add the 1 to what I got there. And then, this is where we start getting into, do you remember the rules for order of operations? If you don't, your calculator is programmed for them, okay? At school, I make my students learn them, but here I'm like, we got 6 weeks, we can't worry about that. Your calculator knows. But if you learned PEMDAS, you learned the order of operations, then you know we do parentheses first, then exponents, then multiplication and division, and then addition and subtraction. The only reason we get to add first is because, yes, it's inside the parentheses. But even inside that parentheses, I've got to divide before I add. Then I'm going to do my exponent, and then I'm going to take the times 1,000 last.
So if you're trying to do it
piece by piece, let's say the only calculator you have available is a $1.99 Walmart special.
It will add, subtract, multiply, and divide. That's about all it will do.
You can still do this problem. You're going to have to do it one piece at a time, and you're going to have to remember what order to do things.
I don't
like to say that I am insisting that you know what order to do things. So that's why I'm suggesting to you, use a calculator that already knows what order to do things. And then that's one less thing you're worried about. You just have to type it in. When it looks like
what it's supposed to look like, it's going to calculate the right number.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So we're now trying to think
about question 90. From page 215.
I'll put my page number up here again. I'm sure the people who watch these videos must wonder why we jump around so much.
Okay, so question 90. Jose invests $1,500 in an account
that earns 5.6% compounded annually.
Marta invests $1,500 in a different account that earns 5.7% compounded annually. So their investment is almost identical.
They're investing the same amount. They both have annual
compounding, all right? The only thing that is different for them is that one of them is getting, let me find those numbers again,
5.6%,
while the other one's getting 5.7. So over here, APR
is going to be 0.056, whereas here APR is going to be 0.057.
And so we think, oh my goodness, how much difference could it really make? Okay,
well, that's what we're going to look at.
How much difference does it really make? How important is a tenth of a percent?
Is this a big deal? Is it worth me,
doing a lot of work to get a better rate?
So
they said we're supposed to figure out what their balance is after 10 years and then again after 30 years, okay? So in each case, because it's annual interest,
we need that formula
for annual interest. The amount that we're going to have at the end of the year is going to be
our principal times 1 plus the APR raised to
the number of years. This is a pretty easy formula. You can do this on pretty much any calculator if you can just find your exponent key. So this is what we're going to do. This is our calculation every time. And we are going to use, they have the same principle. In both cases, the principle is going to be, I don't remember, but I know it was the same. Let me go back and look. $1,500. Here, I'll take my notes with me.
So I'm going to have A equals $1,500. And then I'm going to have 1 plus.
And if I'm calculating Jose's, it's going to be 0.056. And if I'm calculating Marta's, it's going to be 0.057. Okay? And then we're going to raise it to
the first time
around 10 years. Okay? So all of you ladies that are at home watching me, you are in charge of calculating Marta's amount of money after 10 years.
Everybody in? And then
I am going to go with the gentleman at home, and we're going to calculate how much Jose has. So everybody get out your favorite calculator
and do your calculation and check back in with me in 1 second. And I think I'm going to use my handheld calculator just so that work does not all go away. Okay, I need a confirmation at home. Did you get 2,586.61 down to the nearest penny?
I got 0.60, but I may have just not rounded it up.
Oh, did you? Okay, did you have any decimals that you could see past the 60?
Well, I don't remember. I already erased it on my calculator. I just wrote it down with my pen. But it's other than the, the 1 penny, it's the same.
There we go. We will not argue about the penny. We'll call it good if we're within a penny. I'll do that on your test, too. I won't argue about a penny. All right, ladies, how much did Marta have after 10 years?
$2,611.
Did you figure her pennies or not?
No.
No? Did anybody figure it down to the penny?
20 cents.
20 cents? Okay.
Good enough. That's what we'll have. All right,
so we see that there is a difference. Marta has a little bit more, all right? Now let's calculate again, but let's use 30 years, okay? We're gonna invest, remember King Edward, as those years piled up, the difference got rather large. So let's do the same calculation, but do it for 30 years.
All right, do you agree with me?
$7,691.46 for Jose?
Yes, down to the penny.
Down to the penny. We are in agreement. Wonderful. We are a great team. All right. Christine, what did you get for 30 years for Marta's investment?
$7,912.99.
$7,900?
Yes.
Okay, and then keep giving it to me.
I was a slow.
12.99.
All right. You'd like him to give
her one more penny. She has $7,913. All right, so we see that the difference is different. Okay, so now I want you to calculate how much difference is there? How much more did Marta get after 30 years? Difference was one of our key words last week when we looked at those math words, or maybe that was 2 weeks ago. Looked at those math words. What do these words that we read in English mean in math class? Difference meant subtraction. Okay. So, Robbie, when you subtract those two numbers, what do you get?
$221.53.
I agree. Okay.
And so we think, okay, I mean, I'd like to have $220 more than I have right now. I wouldn't poo-poo that. But, you know, across 30 years, that does not seem like a really big difference. But now I want to say this to you.
What if
instead of $1,500 that we used for our principal to start with, it was more like a house loan, you know, and a very conservative house loan, I might add. What if our principal had started out being
$150,000
rather than $1,500? That's 100 times more. Agreed? Their difference would be 100 times more. Now my difference
would equal
$22,153. So when you're looking at the percentage rate on your house loan, if it changes even a tenth of a percentage point across the life of the loan, you could be talking tens of thousands of dollars that you're paying in addition. A very small change in the APR on a long and large loan can make a very big difference.
Okay.
So we don't, you know, want to be too careless with those decisions that we make about
a house loan.
All right. Sometimes I can remember my husband and I looking at one another when rates changed and we're like,
you know, I bet that we should refinance.
Like, yeah, I'm sure we should.
But that would take time. Somebody would have to like
go to the bank and do all these things, you know, and you kind of think, I don't know if I want to do that or not. Well, you know, when I look at $22,000, I go, you know, I think I can make time for that. It turns out that that's going to work for me. So you want to be aware of how much difference things like that can make and make sure that you take advantage of the
savings for yourself.
Okay, we're going to quickly look at 4C. We're not going to look at this in a lot of detail, so I think we can do this and then take our break. I am actually watching the time tonight, I promise. I don't want to edit, I just want to do the slideshow. From the beginning, there we go. All right, so savings plans and investments. Now, here's a horrible looking equation. And right before we go to break, we will do one calculation with this equation just to say that we can, and we did, okay? Because in Desmos, it's not too bad. In a, you know, less powerful calculator, not a lot of fun trying to get that out of there accurately. Trying to think, what do I do first? What do I do next? That can be pretty tricky. But if you are trying to figure out, okay, you're thinking about your savings or whatever, you're trying to figure out what can I make, this is the formula that they talk about using, all right? So at the very end, we'll talk about what if I deposited $100 a month, that's going to be my payment, if I deposit $100 a month at 2.5% interest, nothing outrageous, a conservative 2.5% interest, I'm going to say for the sake of the, when we do this example that it's daily interest. It's compounded daily because we haven't done one of those yet. So we should. And we're going to do it for 18 years. Let's say that this is something you're doing at the birth of your child to try to save up some money for their college education. Or it's something that as a grandparent you're doing for that first grandchild to be able to contribute to their college education. So you know that 18 to 20 years, that's about how much time you have if you start right away. And we're going to look and see, you know, how much money could I acquire? If I could afford to do that, $100 a month for 18 years at 2.5%. So we will look at that at the very end. That's the calculation we're going to do. For now, we're just going to flip through. Here, you know what? I actually wanted to start in the middle. Let me go down where I want to start. There we go.
Now, when we talk about total return on an investment,
the total return is a relative change question. In office hours, we looked at a relative change. Remember, we did it, and it was the new, subtract the reference, divided by the reference. And so we see in a relative change in this context, total return, I'm saying, what is the amount that I have accumulated? Subtract the principal, what I started with, okay, that's my reference point, divided by what I started with, my reference point, times 100. I want you to see that total return is exactly the same problem as relative change, okay, or relative percentage. So we actually did this calculation a week ago, okay? This is not new. It's just another context in which this is used. So here's my absolute change, and I have to use P as the reference value because the principle is what I started with, all right? Now, other than that, stock is one type of investment. Don't ask me anything about stocks. I don't know. I'm just telling you it's a type of investment, all right? I can tell you that this is a relatively high-risk investment. You can make a lot of money. You can lose a lot of money, okay? Depends on how things are going. You invest some principal. You have to buy your stock, okay? So your principal in this case is however much you spent purchasing your stock. Okay, and the only way to make money, to get money out of it, is if you sell your stock.
And so if you pick that moment in time when your stock is very valuable and it is gained, and then you sell, then you make a lot of money. If the market all crashes and everything goes low, and you need money and you have to sell then, you lose, okay? You may get more than what you spent to get in there in the first place. So this is a risky investment. You can lose your principal, but you can also make a lot of money. Stock prices change from time to time, okay? So you might gain, you might lose. There is no such thing as a guaranteed stock. If somebody is trying to tell you there is, they're lying to you. They have been misinformed. All stocks have risks.
I kind of think of stocks like as if, in a way, it's sort of like entertainment. you do it like knowing that you may not get it back. Like that's also how whenever I go to the casino, I say, okay, this is how much I'll spend, no more, that's it. And I think to me, my point of view of faith, that's okay because I'm never putting myself into a situation where I don't have the money. So to me, that's kind of what stocks is.
Right, it can be that way. Stocks, because they're a higher risk investment, if you've got a lot of time and you can just ride the waves, okay, you may go out and you may buy this stock and then you may look 2 years later and go, oh my gosh, it's not even worth half what I paid for it. So you really don't want to sell it then, but if you wait, it might get better. Now, then again, the company might go out of business. So, you know, you just never know. You don't know about the outcome. So you're right. It's a little bit like gambling. There's no doubt about it. But I'm not going to say it's immoral. You just have to be wise about what you're doing. You certainly should know more about it than I do. Okay, another type of investment is a bond, okay? Bonds are how businesses, cities, governments raise money,
okay? You think about it, if you've voted for in very many city or county elections, you'll often see they're trying to pass a bond.
They call it a bond, you know, we're voting on a bond. Do we want to pass the bond so that we can build the new, Farmers Branch, the most recent one that I remember was for the new swimming pool, upgraded swimming pool. They made an indoor pool and then they upgraded their outdoor pool. And so it was on our ballot. And so, you know, I remember when I used to vote, I didn't know what the bond was. I was voting, you know, am I for the pool or am I against the pool? You know, that's usually what people are doing. And they don't really understand the whole bond thing. But what the city is saying is instead of going out and trying to borrow the money from a bank, what they're going to do is sell bonds to people who are willing to buy their bonds. And they will agree to pay a certain percentage on those bonds. And that's how they're going to get their inflow of cash to do this project. And so they say, you know, these are going to be 10-year bonds. So they're going to be 20-year bonds. And so they're saying, in this amount of time, I will pay you back and I will pay you with this much interest. Now, the interesting thing about a bond is it's simple interest. It is not compound interest. So you tie up your money. You've made this investment. And your money is not earning money for you. I mean, it's earning simple interest, but you're not gaining anything over time on the interest. But a bond is a very safe investment. I mean, rarely does anybody forfeit on their bonds. Almost always the entities that sell bonds for projects are solvent and safe. And so you're going to get your money back, and it's a safe investment. It's not nearly as lucrative as the stock market, but it's not nearly as dangerous either, okay? they are paying you simple interest. You do need to be aware of that because we know we're not going to make as much money that way. All right. Then there's cash investments. Okay. So what do they mean when they talk about a cash investment?
That's like an interest-bearing checking account or a savings account or a CD. Okay. Or U.S. Treasury bills are also in this category of a cash investment.
Now, these things are all guaranteed. I mean, even if the bank gets robbed, you don't lose your money, okay?
They're guaranteed. So you're safe with this. You're going to get what they've promised
to give you. Right now, my savings account makes so little interest, and it has for at least, I think we're going on 10 years now, that they no longer even send me a statement for my income taxes because it's not enough money for the IRS to even care. They don't care.
All right. It's such a low percentage.
If you look at what, if you've got a savings account and you actually know what it's paying, it kind of makes you want to cry.
It's barely ahead of a shoebox underneath your bed.
Maybe 0.01% or 0.02%. It's very, the interest rates are very low right now on savings. If you're willing, you know, to have it be what's called less liquid, less available to you, let's say you can drum up $5,000 or $10,000 that you want to invest and get something back. You could buy a CD, and then if you really shop around, you might make 3 to 5%, okay? But it'll be tied up for 5 years, 10 years. Higher percent, the longer they're going to hang on to it, okay? And you'll pay a penalty if you pull it out early. Yes.
Do you know why the interest rates are so low?
It has to do with how our economy is right now. The Fed has pretty much worked at keeping the interest rates low because when the interest rates are low, then businesses can do a lot of business. I don't know if you can remember when the stock market crashed. It's been,
what, 12, 15 years ago is pretty bad, okay? If you lived in Dallas at that point in time,
all of a sudden, nothing was being built anywhere.
I mean, there just was no construction going on.
No one could borrow any money to do that kind of investment. And so everything just kind of crunched to a standstill. Well, to get your economy going, you've got to have some of those things going on. Now you can really tell how drastically it's bounced back. And Dallas has one of the healthiest economies in the U.S. right now. So everywhere we drive, what do we see? We see cranes.
I mean, I think a crane is just a part of the Dallas horizon right now because I can't drive anywhere that they're not building a building with a crane,
building a road with a crane. I mean, everywhere there are cranes. I didn't know there were this many cranes in all of the U.S. But it represents that right now it is fairly easy for investors to get money, and so therefore they can do a lot of building and a lot of expansion. So that's great for that side of business, but for those of us that are trying to be savers, it does not encourage people to save at all. They're like, it's not making any money for me. Why should I save? So
it's, does that kind of help you understand?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Okay. This is it. To do any better, I would need to be an economics teacher, and I confess I am not. So that's the best I can do. I have a basic understanding.
I have a question.
Yes.
So, like, I took personal finance last semester.
Okay.
And there was, like, this big thing that they talked about how, like, a savings account, if you were to put a savings account with interest, if you were to put $500 in the savings account and you were to add $50 to that savings account each month, mm-hmm. and me being 20, by the time I was 38, I would be a millionaire. Is that true?
Well, it's going to depend somewhat on what rate they're paying. What rate were they using to calculate?
I want to say, I'm not 100% sure, but I want to say she said 5%.
Okay. And so, yes, it's probably true at 5%.
But you can't get 5% anymore.
But where are you going to get 5% right now?
Yeah. I mean, it would be great if you could get
5%. this little calculation we're going to do at the end will give you kind of a sense of that because I think you'll be surprised at how much money we land on at the end of it. And I used 2.5% as my calculating one because I know they're really low right now. Okay, the last few terms that we need to understand. Liquidity, okay? How liquid are your assets? How easy can you get to it, all right? The more liquid it is, the easier it is for me to spend, okay? So I'm less likely to keep my savings if I can constantly get into my savings, all right? So if I lack discipline, then I maybe need to put my savings in something that is less liquid. But on the other hand, sometimes we need to know that we can get to our money if an emergency happens. So usually you want to keep at least some of your investments liquid so that you can get to them if you need to. Then there's this idea of risk, okay? Can I actually lose what I have invested, my principal? You know, if you're using the stock market, the answer is yes. It's a risky investment. If you're using a savings account, the answer is no. It's guaranteed to still be there. So, you know, risk, you're going to get more if you're willing to be riskier. If you have more time, you can maybe afford a little more risk. At my point in life, we're not being very risky with our money. Okay, then there's the return. How much return? How much are you going to make? Okay, is this going to be a big return? Is this going to be a small return? And again, usually risk and return go hand in hand. The higher the risk, the higher the return. The lower the risk, the lower the return. Okay, so you have to decide, you know, what you can actually afford to do. Okay, so I want to go back to my pen and I want to do this example and then we're going to take a break. But I want us to, A, have to use that horrible formula one time just to see if you can do it. There we go. Let's see. Oh, I know what I did. Sorry. So many things to run. Let me get my computer back for a second. I need to go to Desmos again. Find where it went. Firefox. There it is. Okay, you can see my Desmos screen now, right?
Someone encourage me. You can see my Desmos screen, right?
Yes.
Okay, super. Thank you. Sometimes I'm not sure after I've pushed enough buttons what I've got going on. Okay, so here's our imaginary question to conclude our discussion of savings, okay? How much would I have if, okay, if I deposited
$100 per month, I wanted to stretch
it, but I wanted to keep it somewhere within reason. Okay.
So $100 per month at 2.5%.
And this is very common right now.
Compounded daily. So my N is 365.
Because interest rates are so low, banks and other institutions are willing to compound your interest. You can actually get continuously compounded interest, but that's more math than we wanted to do. Your book talks about it, but it's not going to be on my test.
Okay, and then for 18 years. Because I said I wanted to look at that thing where you, here, the new baby has arrived.
We want to put some money aside so that this child can have some money for college or whatever. And so this is kind of our situation. Does this make sense to everybody?
This is what we're going to work on. And so we want to know how much would I have in the end.
So that's my A, my future value, my actually value, my accumulated value, and then my particular equation. I believe this first thing, they call this $100.
My payment. If you look at the formulas
in the back of chapter 4 in 4C, you should see this formula. Payment
times, and then there's a big fraction. And in the top of that fraction, there's two sets of parentheses. Inside the first one, 1 plus the APR over the number of times it's being compounded. Close that, raise to the power of N times Y. Subtract 1, close that set of parentheses,
and then in the denominator, we've got APR
divided by N.
Okay, so that is our formula. Now, where do our numbers go in this formula? Payment is this
$100 payment I'm making all the time. So that's going to be 100 times,
and I bet you're pretty good at the rest of these.
One
plus, if I've got 2.5%, then what am I going to put in for my APR?
I can't.
.25. I've got to move it
two places, okay? So I'm going to have
zero on there, .025. If I used .25, that would be as though I was getting paid 25% interest. Would be fabulous, but not going to happen. All right, so .025. Then by N, remember I said we're getting paid every day. So our N is 365. So there's a large number to crop up. And then my N up here is 365 times my years, which are 18. And then I've got that second set of parentheses that I am going to say minus one and close. And I apologize, that's really close to the other one, but I'm trying to stay out of my calculator screen. And then underneath here, I just have the .025 divided by 365. Okay, so all I did was go through and fill in the appropriate number for my example into the formula. Now what we want to do is run the calculator.
Okay, because I want to do this calculation.
And so as soon as I touch this screen to run this calculator, everything that I've written is going to disappear. Does anybody have any questions about what I've written before it all disappears?
I hear
nothing. I'm going to believe we're okay. So here we go. I'm going to go back to cursor. I'm going to clear from our last problem. And now I'm going to put all of this stuff into my calculator. So my payment of $100 was the first thing. I am multiplying it, so I'll put my times dot in there. And then there's a big fraction. So I'm going to use A over B so that I can enter the things in the top of the fraction separate from the things in the bottom of the fraction.
In the top, I had two parentheses, so I've got to open them both.
And then I have one
plus,
that plus sign, there we go. And then I have another fraction. So I just push
my fraction
key again, and I get another fraction inside my fraction. What I like about Desmos. All right, .025 is in the top of that fraction.
And then I go down to the bottom
of my fraction, and that is going to be 365 there.
I am then ready to close this.
So I close that parenthesis.
I didn't really want to do that. There. Okay,
fine. Be out here.
There.
Okay, now I'm outside my parenthesis. I need an exponent next, so A to the power of B. That's my exponent key. Yes, my cursor is up there. Now I'm going to do 365
times
18.
All right. And notice that
Desmos keeps it all up there in the exponent, which is what I want it to do. All right. Then I need to put subtract. So now let's see.
Yeah, there's my
subtraction sign. It comes down. Subtract 1. And then I'm ready to do my denominator. So I move my cursor down below. And in the denominator, I need another fraction. So I push my fraction key again. In the top, I have
.025. There we go. And in the bottom, I have 365.
You have to close your top parentheses, though, right?
Yep, I should have done that. Thank you for catching that. Let's go back up there
and do that. I go out here. No, I just didn't want to close it, did it? There we go. Now it's closed.
Okay, now did I get everything done? 100 times 2 parentheses, 1 plus 0.025 divided by 365 times this in the exponent. Subtract one, yes, closed, very good. And then here's my fraction. And so here's how much money I have.
Can my grandbaby go to school on that?
Holy cow.
I think they can go to a pretty nice school. What do you think? $829,000. Okay? $829,000. How did we get here? $100 a month. Okay, $100 a month. 2.5% interest. Okay? And 18 years. So, to go back and answer your question about can I be a millionaire? Yeah, okay? If I am really disciplined with my savings, really disciplined with my savings, and if I stretch myself to save as much as I possibly could, and I'm wise with that investment, and if I start when I'm young, okay? We're not going to discuss Mrs. Long's age, but let's just say, you know, this isn't maybe going to happen for me. Okay.
Okay, wait. I just realized something.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to try not to say too much because I know you said we weren't talking about the test.
But that's okay.
If this was not what we used, then are we going to not do well on the test?
Are you talking about your 1 week, your unit one test where you wrote these short answer things?
Yes, ma'am.
You would not have needed this calculation on that test. That test was only over chapters 1 and 2.
So my answer was wrong.
Well, if you use this, I would say so. I don't know what you used it for. I can't even think right now because I changed that test this year for the first time in a while. I taught this class for so many years in different forms. I started out teaching it traditional on campus. I had, you know, 15 weeks to work with twice a week. And then I was teaching it for a while online only, and I had 6 weeks, and I never got to talk to anybody. I've taught it in a lot of formats, a couple different books, blah, blah, blah. And so I was looking at my test this year. I decided, you know, I'm going to change this question. And so now I honestly cannot remember for sure everything that I left on there. But
I know which one it is. Can I say, or you would rather I didn't?
I would rather you didn't. Okay. I can go back and look later, but
well, let's just say I used the savings account as a reference on one of those test questions.
So did I.
Well, and as a reference, it might have been okay? Because if it was part of your big picture, you know, response to something, I know I left a question on there where you had to do some planning and think about and say what all you would consider in order to make a decision. What the focus I was looking at was that problem-solving strategy that was about 4 steps. Where you would kind of think through, have I gathered all my information? Am I using? So within the context of that, you might have actually done a calculation for me that I didn't necessarily expect for you to do, but yay you, okay?
Okay, even if we did the calculation wrong, that's okay.
Yeah, that's not necessarily a big deduction because that first test is not a calculation test. I think I leave one question on there where you do some calculations. As I recall, was there a required question that was about putting in a flower bed or some landscaping project?
That wasn't required, but that was on one of the questions, yes.
It was an option? Okay. So that's an actual calculation question. And to the best of my memory, that's the only question on there that actually requires a calculation.
The other ones were pretty much you thinking for yourself and answering how you think.
Yes, they were. Okay. Looking for that analytical reasoning, looking for you to think about the logic of some statements, some truth tables were an option, some things like that. Okay. Anybody got any questions before we go to break? We all happy? I have about 8:10, so let's come back at 8:25. All right. We'll finish it out.
All right, gives me time to get home from work.
Hey, that's a good thing. You are driving, aren't you? All right, be safe.
Thanks.
Oh, oops.